Chapter 9. I awoke Sunday morning with a feeling of anticipation. This was to be the first day for our new preacher, Trace Hughes, to fill the pulpit. I could hardly wait to hear him. And to add to that excitement, our housewarming was scheduled for 4 o'clock that afternoon, giving people time to rest after church. The housewarming would also serve as sort of a get-acquainted party for our new minister. The day promised to be beautiful and sunny, with only a few lumpy thunderheads along the horizon, a common sight during the summer months. This was a perfect day for worshiping the Lord, then getting together with our friends and neighbors later. Mom had wanted to have a sit-down country supper with brown beans, fried potatoes, cornbread, and peach cobbler, but I had talked her into keeping it simple. Just cookies and tea would do fine for a housewarming, I assured her. The only extra activity was a brainchild of my friend Amy Miller. She wanted to introduce everyone not only to the house, but to the surrounding countryside. She came up with the idea for a sunset stroll.
"Darcy," she said, "everybody is going to be interested in your mother's herb garden, Lee Creek, the old orchard, and that deserted cemetery. Why don't we have a ghost walk?"
I bit my tongue to keep from yelling, "Are you crazy?" Instead, I exhibited amazing self-control, and my voice rose only a little when I said, "I don't want anybody to think our home is spooky. It's a wonderful, warm place. Sure, we can walk around outside and see what there is to see, but I'm not going to say anything about ghosts, for goodness sake." Amy, who was never one to give up easily, answered that at least we could wait until nearly dark, provide everyone with a flashlight and a map with places of interest marked on it, and the darkness would lend some atmosphere. I finally agreed. I didn't want the inclusion of a sunset stroll to take away from the warm, friendly, get-together atmosphere. Mom was just as eager to hear the new preacher as I. She was ready to go to church with time to spare. To me, my mother was always an attractive woman, but today she had taken special care, actually wearing a smidgen of lipstick. Her dark hair framed her face, and the lavender dress she chose to wear set off her olive skin. I had heeded Dr. McCauley's advice about wearing pants that would not rub the burn on my leg, but I hesitated to wear capris to church. Yes, churches were much less formal than years past, and I liked the idea that we went to worship, not to show off our clothes. However, First Baptist of Levi, Oklahoma, had an old-fashioned congregation. We sang, from hymnals, all the good old songs of the church. The women wore dresses, and the men wore long pants, mostly blue jeans. So I chose a full blue swirly skirt that came past the bandage on my leg, paired with a solid blue blouse. I stuck my feet into a pair of black flats, piled my hair on top of my head, added lipstick and blusher, and I was ready, in record time. Pat Harris was our pianist. Each Sunday she played a soothing prelude while people found their favorite pews. Then the piano accompanied us as we sang. We may have been a bit off-key at times, but our hearts were in tune, even if our voices were not. Hiram Schuster had been our song leader since I could remember. He was not as robust as he once had been, and his voice sometimes quavered, but he waved his right arm vigorously, his left hand holding the songbook, and sang lustily, a beatific smile on his wrinkled face. The church parking lot was full of cars when we arrived, and as Mom and I entered the sanctuary, we felt lucky to see two empty spaces in our pew, second from the front, right side of the building. To my surprise, Grant was already seated there. Usually he worked Sundays. He was not a regular churchgoer, although he was a Christian. Pat was not at her usual place at the piano. Was she sick? And where was Trace Hughes? The crowd stirred restlessly, probably wondering the same things Mom and I whispered about. Then a hush descended as our minister walked up the aisle and stood in front of the podium. I gasped. He wore faded blue jeans, a short-sleeved shirt which hung over his jeans, and brown cowboy boots, and he had a guitar slung over his shoulder. "Good morning, dear flock," he drawled, grinning the wide smile that showed off his dimples. "We may do things a little differently this morning, but that's all right, isn't it? I don't believe the Lord always stuck to protocol, did he? I've asked Miss Pat and Hiram to take a well-deserved break this morning, and I'm going to lead you in a few songs."
I glanced across the aisle at Hiram Schuster and his wife. Pat sat stiffly beside them, frowning, and none of the three looked like they were truly in the spirit. Trace propped his foot on the front pew and ran his fingers over the guitar, and a lovely arpeggio filled the sanctuary. Smiling, he belted out the first notes to "Great is the Lord." I sat up straight and my mouth dropped open. People turned toward each other and then back to the man at the front of the room. No professional guitarist or vocalist could have outshone Trace Hughes's musical ability. One by one, the congregation joined the singing. The music was so joyous, so upbeat and happy, that it was nearly irresistible. Amazingly, I heard several people clapping in time with the beat. Was this the beginning of a new era at the First Baptist Church of Levi, staunch and loyal backbone of the community, dedicated and sincere followers of the Lord? As it turned out, Trace's sermon was just as unorthodox as his music. "You know," he said, at last climbing onto the stage so everyone could see and hear him more easily, "I don't think a sermon has ever been preached that could outdo the word of the Lord, so this morning I'm going to read to you from the book of Deuteronomy, 28th chapter. I think it's something we should take to heart. It'd be good if every politician in state and federal governments could hear this at least once a week." And that's what he did. He read the whole chapter without leaving out a verse. Those ancient words became vivid and alive through the smoothness of Trace's voice. Even Grant, who had been sitting with his arms folded across his chest during the singing, relaxed and had an attentive look. At the end of the chapter, Trace bowed his head, said a short prayer, and told us we were dismissed. The church buzzed like a hive of busy bees as we left, but I felt singularly blessed and refreshed by this unusual service. The only question I had was why this man, whom the Lord had showered with good looks and talent in abundance, was content to be the pastor of a small, countrified church in northeast Oklahoma.